Welcome to Exhibition, an Xbox podcast, episode number 89. My name is Samuel Adams, and on today's show, we are talking about a lot of live service games that are not going to be live much longer because an entire list of titles has been announced to be shutting down in the months ahead. We're going to dig into the biggest names on the list, and on top of that, talk about what the future of live service games look like as the industry grows and evolves. On top of that, we have a report on what's happening at the Coalition alongside yet another report of what's going on behind the scenes at 343, and it looks like another Halo limited time event is on the way. We have this and more to dig into, including a new leaked Xbox Series X controller color, so you might want to stick around for that. But without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into it. There is no getting around it. 2023 has been a rough year for live service games. And if you don't know what a live service game is, we're talking about titles like Destiny 2, Apex Legends, Overwatch 2, Halo Infinite, Sea of Thieves, Warzone 2, Fortnite. These are games that launch, and then in the weeks, months, and years after they launch, these games continue to give players new content in exchange for their time and some form of monetization. So you could be getting a battle pass, you could be getting microtransactions for cosmetics, and Destiny 2, you can literally buy expansions every few years, kind of like you would in World of Warcraft. But no matter how you cut it, this business model has become very popular as these games have become more popular. So more and more developers and publishers have been putting out live service games. And in 2023, it seems like there's been somewhat of a reckoning where the industry has really taken a step back and said, is this really working for us? Because the reality of the situation is there isn't enough time in the day for every player to enjoy every live service game, and some are going to have to go the way of the dodo bird. That's just reality. That's what we've seen this year. This week, in particular, has been gruesome in the world of live service games. I mean, jumping over to Destructoid.com, they've been keeping up with a list of the games that have been announced to be shutting down in the end of 2023 or at some point through 2023, and that includes Apex Legends Mobile and Battlefield Mobile, the latter of which was still in beta in certain areas around the world. It had not even seen the light of day and had been in development for years. That's a big choice. We also see Rumbleverse on the Epic Games side of things getting shut down alongside Crossfire X, which is no longer available for purchase on the Xbox Marketplace, and Knockout City, which I think was kind of a shocker for a lot of people because that was generally well received. Now, in addition to that, a couple of weeks back, we saw Marvel's Avengers, which was announced to be shutting down by the end of the year, and the in-game store is going to be free for everybody in the coming weeks. So if you do want to experience Marvel's Avengers, you definitely should dive in and give that a look. But we also saw the announcement that Back for Blood, a game from Turtle Rock Studios, is not going to be getting any additional DLC, and it's going to exist in the exact same way that it is. So the servers are not getting shut off, but development on the game is winding down and will not see any additional work this year. So that's kind of the layout right now. And jumping over to Gamatsu's tweet, where a lot of that information was pulled, we see some lesser-known titles like Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai, A Hero's Bonds, Love Live, I think, Love Live, potentially, School Idol Festival, don't know what that means, but Echo VR also. We've seen a lot of these games announce that they are not going to be around by the time 2024 comes. It's been met with a lot of different reactions. So the big names on the list, Apex Legends Mobile, that was a big shocker. I mean, that one launched in 2021, and it wasn't bad. It was a great mobile take on Apex Legends, but again, it's a mobile battle royale. That in and of itself is kind of a risk, and Fortnite is no longer available on the app stores, so there was a potential opportunity there, but it seems like it didn't pan out. Battlefield Mobile baffles me. Now, the excuse was that they wanted to focus on a new future that the teams had coalesced around behind the scenes at Electronic Arts. But again, multiple years of development had gone into this Battlefield title on the go. Kind of shocking to see that one go as well. Rumbleverse, not really that big of a shocker. I mean, on the Epic Games side of things, I don't think it was lighting anybody's world on fire. But I digress. Crossfire X, dumpster fire from day one. Not surprised there, but again, roughly about a little over 6 months, about 8 months or so since that one launched. Kind of shocking to see it end so abruptly. And then Knockout City, it had been around for a couple of years. I think it launched back in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. So it did make it a pretty good long way. But again, these servers are going offline. Now, in the form of Knockout City, you can actually get private servers if you did want to keep playing multiplayer. If you have the ability to set up a server, you can. But as far as just ease of access multiplayer, none of these games are going to be available. And additionally, Marvel's Avengers, I would be remiss to not call that one out once again and say, that's massive. I mean, we're talking about an Avengers game that was developed by Crystal Dynamics and published by Square Enix. That is significant. And so my question is, what is the purpose of the shutdown phase that we're in right now? Is it that these games have been in development, they launched, and now the bottom line is coming in a couple of years later with people reevaluating and saying, okay, that didn't work for us in this post-Fortnite world that we started building this game in. We should go back to the traditional model. Or are we now in an economic recession or approaching an economic recession or at the very least a period of economic uncertainty and these companies are tightening their belts and trying to figure out what happens next? I think that could also be the case right there. And of course, it takes people to build these games. It takes players on these games to give developers what they need to continue building. And that is money from monetization. And if no one's playing these games and buying the battle passes and being invested in the worlds they're building, then there probably isn't a point in continuing to build. And so personally, as I've followed this news and I've seen what's going on with these live service games, my hot take is that we are finally hitting somewhat of the same situation that we saw in the 80s with Atari, where we are just inundated with live service games to the point that it's bursting the bubble. And I think that's something that I've seen thrown around on Twitter over the past week as people have talked about this situation. But there have been so many live service games that are trying to go after the same amount of players, same amount of time. And so as somebody who enjoys the live service approach, I'm going to continue playing Halo Infinite. I'm going to continue playing Forza Horizon 5, which is somewhat of a different situation, not really free to play, but again, a live service game that keeps adding content. I'm going to keep up with those. Battlefield 2042, I'll probably keep up with that. Modern Warfare 2, I'll probably keep up with that. As far as digging back into Knockout City, it was never going to be in the cards. I might have kept it installed on the Xbox, but it's not going to be one that I boot up and go back to. And the same goes for Crossfire X. I played 10 minutes of that. I'm out. I'm not keeping that on. Rumbleverse, I never even checked out. I knew it was there, but I'm just not going to. And I think that a lot of people are probably in that same exact boat where they are stuck with their Rocket League, their Fortnite, their Warzone, whatever their live service crux is. They're going to stick with that one, and they probably aren't going to migrate over to something that didn't prove to be a hit right out of the gate. I mean, games that are sticky tend to stick around, and I don't think that any of these games on this list necessarily had that stickiness that it takes to compete in the live service space. And so my question that I'll leave you all with is it possible for games to continue to have success in the live service space, or is it something where the big boys have come in and they've been established? Because in my opinion, I think it's important for developers to try this business model if they think it's going to work for their title, because it very well could. There is a lot of opportunity for companies to get in there, build a live service game, and take the world by storm. I mean, I always come back to Fortnite in the fact that that was originally a PvE-based defense game that they took a chance on and said, hey, it'd be funny if we competed with PUBG. Let's go ahead and make this into a battle royale. It's a mode that was developed in a few weeks. Now it's literally funding Epic Games for the most part. I mean, that's where their big cash cow is. And so games that take a chance on this business model very well could pay off. But with the establishment being what it is today, is it possible for games to repeat that success? Or was that kind of a flash in the pan, one-time only style event that we saw a couple of years ago establish these games as a service? I'd love to hear your thoughts, but this past week has been absolutely crazy. And I think there's probably more of this coming in 2023. I would stay tuned. E3 2023 is set to be a very big deal for the ESA. In fact, this is their first physical show in 4 years since 2019. In 2020, everything got canceled because of COVID. 2021, they had a digital show, but it never really did come together in the same way that E3s of the past had. And then in 2022, things also got canceled to plan for 2023. And we'll see how that all pans out here in a couple of months. But some very big news broke over at IGN from Kat Bailey this week, where she wrote, IGN has heard from multiple knowledgeable sources that Xbox, Sony, and Nintendo won't be a part of E3 2023 or have a presence at the Los Angeles Convention Center show floor. That's kind of a shocking part there towards the end, that Nintendo specifically, because they have been a longtime supporter of E3, will not be on the show floor. None of the big three are going to be in attendance at this year's show. So the question is this the end for E3? What does this mean for the future? Does this mean no events this summer? And we'll start with the last question there first. No. Of course there are going to be events this summer, but the industry has evolved in a drastic way since E3 was first established, because if you haven't been keeping up with the history of the show, originally it was built as kind of this subsidiary of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, where gaming got to be such a big part of that show that the video game industry decided to spin off and do its own thing. That is where these big companies, publishers, developers, whoever it might be, would gather and show the world what they had been working on. And this is as the internet kind of came to be. This is something where this show was how you got media coverage for your game, for your system. This is where you announced your big thing. And of course, growing up watching G4, Spike TV, all of that, I was always tuned into E3 coverage, and that really was the world summit of gaming. It's where you heard about all of the new stuff you would be playing over the course of the next year or so. Now, we've got to the point where social media and the internet make news spread like wildfire. You don't need an event of this size, of this caliber, and of this cost to spread the word about your new hardware or your new software. You can just put out a tweet, you can put out a digital showcase, and you can still get that same amount of engagement, drive that same amount of coverage, and in fact, you might even get more than you would have before, because these companies now have their own followings rather than having to rely on E3 itself, which was kind of this very significant namesake that everybody turned to for their information. So I personally don't think this is shocking. And of course, if you look at what Xbox and Sony have done in recent years, they haven't really relied on E3 at all. E3's been absent, and so Sony and Microsoft have had to really adapt and overcome throughout COVID. And I think that's something they were moving towards to begin with. I mean, pre-COVID, Sony was already out. Xbox still had a presence at the show, but it sounds like this year they are either going all in on their own show or potentially aligning with Summer Game Fest from Jeff Keighley. Of course, Jeff has been putting on his own E3 style presentation over the past few years, and it's been phenomenal. I mean, I really love the format of Summer Game Fest. I think it brings everything together in a very nice way. And you have Jeff. I mean, he's a very charismatic, face of the industry kind of guy. And so whenever the ESA doesn't have that, it's pretty hard to compete with that. And so I think that's kind of where the show finds itself this year. And so the question is, will 2023 be a success for E3? And how will the future look? What is E3 2024 going to look like? And will there be an E3 2024? I think that there will be. And I could see it going one of two ways. Either E3 becomes the THQ Nordic show, or, you know, that type of show, where you get the smaller third-party titles, you get the AA games being shown off at E3, or alternatively, E3 becomes more of like a New York City Comic-Con, where some smaller announcements are made, but by and large, well, I can't say that. New York City Comic-Con's massive for the TV industry. It's massive for the streaming industry. I know that's where, like, they unveil the Marvel plans for the next phases, so Comic-Con probably isn't the best direct one-to-one comparison, but it's going to be more of a fan event. I think that's where E3 is probably going to net out, where fans can meet up and they can play demos of the upcoming games. They can potentially see what's next and go hands-on with some of these titles that they would just see on YouTube or that they would just see on a Twitch live stream. I think that's where the future of E3 lies. And I say that because it's now in control and organized and run by ReedPop, who is in control of the New York City Comic-Con. I think that is a very wise direction, and I think that would still be a very fun E3 experience, but it still takes buy-in from the big third parties. Because if I'm going to fly out to E3 and I'm going to fly out to Los Angeles and go to this big party of gaming, I want to be able to play the next big Xbox game. I want to be able to go hands-on with Nintendo's new hardware. I want to be able to see what PlayStation's cooking up. I want those experiences, and I think going and flying out over there, you know, again, as somebody who lives in Charlotte, that's across the country, if I were to make that trek, I would want to play more than just the next THQ Nordic indie darling. I want to play more than whatever the next big AA game is. I want the full experience. And so I think that E3 needs to shoot for these publishers to be involved once again, but who knows what kind of contracts have been signed behind closed doors, because if they want to be a part of Summer Game Fest, then Jeff Keighley probably has some kind of clause in there where they say, this is where you show off this game, you can't show it off anywhere else. That very well could be the case. And we're also, as we mentioned earlier, going into a year where there's a lot of economic uncertainty, and so if the marketing budgets have been cut and they are trying to selectively choose where they show off their games, a digital showcase with potentially a physical appearance at Summer Game Fest, which is a smaller media focused kind of event, I think that's probably more of a money well spent scenario as compared to building out this big booth at E3. So that's just my two cents. I think E3 is going to survive, but it will never be the event that you and I know. It will never be the event that we grew up with. It is going to be a smaller, more fan-driven event that it's probably already honestly been in recent years, and we're just going to have to get used to that. A couple of weeks back, we saw a lot of talk around 343, even going so far as to say that 343 may be taken off of Halo development entirely. And of course, all of this followed the news that Microsoft is laying off 10,000 of its employees, some of which are coming from the Xbox side of the business, spanning Bethesda, spanning the marketing team, and 343, amongst others. But this week, we saw one of the biggest reports to date from Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg, who dished out how many people had reportedly been let go, as well as what the future of Halo looks like, including a new engine. Going over to John Fingus at Engadget, who has the recap, 343 Industries and Halo may be here to stay despite Microsoft's mass layoffs, but that doesn't mean it's business as usual for the franchise. Bloomberg sources claim 343 is effectively restarting Halo development between multiple changes that include the loss of at least 95 jobs, including directors and key contractors. Notably, the studio is reportedly switching to Unreal Engine after both a leadership shuffle and struggling with its aging in-house platform, Slipspace. It's even breaking from its familiar story-driven gameplay, according to the tipsters. The 343 team is understood to be using Unreal for an unannounced game nicknamed Tatanka. Of course, this is the Certain Affinity game we've seen talked about in recent years, developed with the help of longtime ally Certain Affinity. It was originally built as a Battle Royale title, but might evolve into other forms, the sources say. While some at 343 are supposedly worried Unreal Engine might affect how Halo feels to play, Slipspace's glitches and hard-to-use tech have apparently held back multiplayer features in Halo Infinite that include past favorites like Assault and Extraction game modes. Many of the laid-off workers were crafting game prototypes in Unreal rather than producing new missions for Halo Infinite, Bloomberg says. 343 had considered switching engines for the past decade, the insiders claim, but it wasn't until studio lead Bonnie Ross and engine overseer David Berger left in late 2022 that the company committed to the change. Pierre Heitz, who replaced Ross, is said to have focused on the company on greenlighting new tech while expanding Infinite. Microsoft has declined to comment. A revamped strategy would not be surprising even without layoffs. While Infinite was well received on launch, delayed modes, seasons, and even a canceled split-screen mode have not helped its reputation. All things considered, these are growing pains, in my opinion. There's been a lot of turnover. It's unfortunate to see 95 people reportedly let go from the team, but 343 is entering a rebuilding phase of its existence where Halo 4, Halo 5, and Halo Infinite did not hit in the way that they needed to, because Halo has a huge responsibility in the world of Xbox. It is the flagship Xbox game, and it's going to continue being the flagship Xbox game for the foreseeable future. When I think about Xbox, I think about Master Chief. I mean, as Snowbike Mike said on the Xcast, he's on the box. I mean, he's there on the back of your Xbox Series X if you bought it on day one. He is sitting there ready and waiting for you as soon as you flip that thing around when you get in the Best Buy parking lot. when you are on the box, you have got to be good. I mean, it's like God of War Ragnarok. Kratos is on that box, and he had better be good. And so I think that as 343 looks to the future, it's important for them to establish a new presence. It's important for them to build a new game that is able to evolve quickly, that is able to keep up with the pace of modern games, because Slipspace has code in it from the original Halo Combat Evolved. And if you've been building on the same engine for 20 years, it's got a lot of aging tech on top of a lot of tech that has either been abandoned or changed. It's probably not the best optimized experience when you're developing. And of course, we've seen reports that the engine itself is holding back development since the launch of Halo Infinite, potentially even before that. I mean, we have developers and contractors that are coming through. They've got to learn Slipspace before they can even truly build new content for the game. And so if somebody has a year-long contract, let's say 6 months of that is spent really learning the ins and outs of the engine. If they make it to their year mark, that's 6 months of work. I mean, that's just an example. I'm not going off of any tangible numbers. But being able to switch to Unreal Engine 5 and maintain the feel of Halo means that they could pull from the Epic Games teams. It means they could pull from PlayStation teams. If any of these other developers are looking for new opportunities, 343 would be much less of a learning curve if they were able to just transition the knowledge they'd gained from prior development cycles and bring it over to Halo and start working on new content on day one. Pick up projects where others left off and keep them going. That could very well be the future. And so, ultimately, looking back over this past couple of weeks, as we've talked about 343 to death, and as we've talked about the future of Halo, I want whatever it takes to be done to make a good Halo game. It sounds simple, but apparently it's not. It doesn't matter what tools are used. It does not matter what teams make it. If it's Certain Affinity, if it's 343, if it's somebody under Activision Blizzard, if it's id Software, whoever makes the next Halo game, make it good. Tell a good story. Deliver good multiplayer. I just need some good Halo content because I love Halo Infinite. We talked about it last week. I put almost 11 days into the game. It is a game that is near and dear to my heart. I've played through every battle pass. I've played through every limited time mode. I cannot wait to dive into the new one that's coming next week. We'll talk about that more on next week's show. I think we'll save that for next week. But I want a really good narrative-driven Halo game that's as good as 343 can make it, that's as good as any have been in the Halo franchise. I want 3. I want Reach. I want those feelings that I had back in the day. And whatever it takes to get there, let's see him do it. So 343 may be in turmoil, but everything is fine at Xbox Game Studios outside of that, right? Maybe not. So we have a report on Game Mess Mornings over there with Jeff Grubb and the team at Giant Bomb, as reported on by Video Games Chronicle, in which Grubb claimed the Coalition was at one point working on two now-canceled projects in addition to carrying out support work on Halo Infinite and working with Epic on the Matrix Awakens Unreal Engine 5 tech demo they released back in 2021. He says, quote, "They have canceled that smaller project as well as another project, so there have been two games canceled there." This was all reflected in the layoffs that happened at Microsoft, which did hit the Coalition a little bit. The studio is now going to move on fully to Gears 6. I say now, it has likely moved on to Gears 6 in full over the course of the last year, but definitely that will be their next game, end quote. So if you had any questions about what the Coalition was working on, it sounds like Gears 6 is now the main focus of the entire team. And this is disappointing to some degree because you always love to see companies experiment. I would have loved to see what the Coalition could have come up with if they weren't working on a Gears, because I think so often you see a lot of companies get trapped by success. I think that's what's happened with 343 to some degree, where they've been boxed in to work on Halo because they were built to work on Halo. And so I'm sure that a lot of developers within 343 have aspirations to build something else, even within the Halo universe, but they've got to work on this FPS that the world knows and loves. And so at the Coalition, they've become known as the Gears people. That's exactly what they are. And so I think that a good example of a company breaking out of this mold recently is, of course, Tango Gameworks. They were known for a lot of people as the Evil Within people. And lo and behold, they pump out Hi-Fi Rush, dropping it all of a sudden, after the developer direct, and it's taken the world by storm. And now Tango Rush, or Tango Gameworks, is now known as kind of the Hi-Fi Rush people, at least for the time being. And so the Coalition had the potential to do that. They very well could have, and they very well still could. Again, this is all just coming from Jeff Grubb, but of course he has a pretty good track record. Gears 6, however, that's something that is guaranteed to be a success. That's something that is guaranteed to be a financial success. Now, is the game going to be another Gears of War Judgment, or is it going to be a Gears of War 4 or a Gears of War 5? Those were really well received. Could it be a Gears 3 even? Could it be one of the best in the franchise? Potentially. Who knows what that's going to end up looking like. But I loved Gears 5. I loved Gears 4. I think they're both great games. And it would be good to see a Gears 6 at some point in the future. So I would say maybe you'll see some news about this one towards the end of this year, maybe next year, because I think it's probably been in the works for quite some time. I mean, Gears 5 came out during the Xbox One X kind of generation, the latter half of the Xbox One. So it certainly is high time to see what's going on in that world. And I would love to see it become a reality. For the last big story on today's show, we've all got to take a step back and pay our respects to what very well could have been one of the best first-person shooter single-player campaigns the world had ever known. But we will never know, because Titanfall Legends has been canceled. At least that's what the project was codenamed over at Electronic Arts before it had the plug pulled earlier this week, alongside Battlefield Mobile and Apex Mobile, like we talked about earlier in the show. But this all started with a report from VGC and also some talk on, again, Jeff Grubb and the Game Mess Mornings podcast from the team at Giant Bomb, where they reported that this Titanfall game was not going to be Titanfall 3, but instead Grubb says it was going to feature a very beloved character, BT 7274, the main robot from Titanfall 2. Now, it was said to feature Cuban Blisk, as reported on here by GameSpot, who is a member of the Apex Legends roster, and famous characters from across Titanfall would help you through this single-player campaign, and it was going to be more of a tie-in than its own standalone thing, just also set in the universe of Titanfall and Apex Legends. That would have been awesome, because there is no getting around the fact that people love Titanfall, and they especially love Titanfall 2. In fact, prior to Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, Respawn Entertainment were the Titanfall guys. I mean, when Respawn was first founded, after the founder left the Call of Duty team, people thought that Titanfall was going to be the new Call of Duty. They thought that was where their main competition was going to come from. And so then, all of a sudden, things pivoted, and of course, now we have the studio that we have today, where they are working on multiple projects, but primarily, Respawn is known for Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order and Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Again, no shade there. Those are some great games as well. Can't wait to check out Survivor 4 myself. But this Titanfall game would have been awesome, and it sounds like it was going to be awesome because it was led by creative director Muhammad Alavi. Now, that's, again, all just reported. We don't know if that's actually the case, but he previously worked on Modern Warfare's All Ghillied Up, as well as No Russian in Modern Warfare 2, so those are two of the most iconic missions in FPS games. You know things were going to be good, but he left the game in January 2022, and it sounds like things have been on the downhill trek ever since. So, it's unfortunate to see these games getting canceled, and I really think this is one that, if it is in fact true, and if this had been in development, and if it was canceled, big mistake from Electronic Arts. You never know how things are going behind the scenes, but the idea of a single-player Titanfall game is one that a lot of players, including myself, would be very keen on seeing more of, because we've seen, as we talked about earlier in the show, a ton of live service games that have come, a lot that have gone. We've seen some first-person shooters come out, not many have stuck around. Modern Warfare 2 is doing incredibly well this year, but Battlefield 2042... hit, didn't land on the recovery, but still not going to ever be the game that it could have been. So I think Titanfall has a chance to be a single-player game once again, and to see them not taking that chance is a pretty big disappointment. To wrap up today's show, we've got three stories I wanted to touch on. First and foremost, Xbox Series X and S are getting a price bump in Japan by 5,000 yen starting on February 17th. Now, this comes out to about $39 USD if you do the math on it. And it's unfortunate to see, because Microsoft is trying to break into this region in a bigger way, have a bigger footprint, and of course get more Japanese titles on their system. And so to increase the price a couple of years after the release of the console, when the hardware itself is older now, I mean, literally it is an aging console. It's kind of weird to see a bump of this caliber. Now, is $40 going to break the bank? Not for some people, but for others, potentially. And whenever you're going to the store and you're choosing between a PlayStation or an Xbox, that price factor is a factor that could transition somebody over from going with what's known, from sticking with PlayStation to moving over to a new Xbox product that they've never tried before. And so it's kind of strange to see Microsoft give up that price benefit, but they are crunching the numbers behind the scenes, and it's a choice that they did have to make. So you could see it drop back down again just as easy as it came, but a very, very strange move to see Microsoft making in the region. On top of that, there is a new Xbox Series X and S controller on the way. This is the special edition Stellar Shift Color that announced, or it should be announced soon, and it should launch on February 14th, 2023, according to an Amazon store listing. This is over on the European version of Amazon, and it is priced at €65, which is going to be about $65, $70, somewhere around there. It's got a very pretty purple-blue looking color to it. I'm a big fan of it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Amazon Luna colors, if you're familiar with that streaming service. But it's cool to see Microsoft continuing to flesh out this collection, and I would not be shocked to see this announcement coming sometime next week, because we are quickly coming up on February the 14th. And finally, now the world knows, MLB The Show is coming back for another year. Who would have thought that one of the biggest and most popular sports games in the world is making a return? But lo and behold, MLB The Show 2023 comes out swinging, pun intended, on March the 28th, if I remember correctly. Just double checking that. Yes, indeed. Coming out on Xbox One, Series X, S, and of course, available on day one via Xbox Game Pass. We have the cover athlete, Jazz Chisholm Jr., as well as the collector's edition cover athlete, Derek Jeter. And if you do want the pre-order, those open up on February the 6th, and the game launches once again on February the 28th, or March the 28th, excuse me, not February. But cool perk to see it come back to Game Pass once again. Even cooler to see the game continue to expand beyond PlayStation and come back to Nintendo Switch and come back to Xbox. And I love to see this trend continue. It's clear that this model is working. More players playing the game drives additional revenue. So that's a no-brainer. You know people are going to be in for that one. And if you want to be in, once again, the game comes out on March the 28th, day one, via Xbox Game Pass. But that rounds out this week's episode of Exhibition, an Xbox podcast. If you enjoy the show, you're new here, and you like what you see, be sure to hit that subscribe button on YouTube, add the show to your podcast feed of choice, and get it delivered to you each and every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And if you made it all the way to the end of the show, let me know down below, do you like the show on Sundays? Would you rather it be on potentially Monday, maybe Thursday, Friday? Friday? How you feel about a Friday show? Let me know in the comment section down below, or hit me up on Twitter at JampackSam. I'd love to hear your thoughts, because I'm planning for the future and I want you to be a part of it. If you made it all the way to the end, you are a dedicated individual, my friend, and I appreciate you being here. But until next time, you guys have a fantastic rest of your week. I'll see you soon. And remember, keep on playing.